はい。
You're listening to KTOO. We're live, we're local, and it's time for a Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins, your host, here in the studio with producer Jeff Brown. It's Tuesday, November 21st, and on today's program, Natalie Watson from AWARE will be here to talk about Girls on the Run and Boys Run. Montana Nolan will be here to discuss the canvas's presence at the public market. Photographer Ben Huff will highlight Ice Fog Press at the Gallery Walk. And Alexandra Pierce will give us an update on the city's park and recreation programs. Those interviews, National Native News, the Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more this hour on a Juno Afternoon. Let's check in with the National Weather Service. It's currently 23 degrees in the capital city under overcast skies. Chance of light snow tomorrow. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Keystone XL pipeline project now has permission to cross Nebraska. Victoria Wicks has more on the decision, which was announced Monday by the state's Public Service Commission.
PSC Commissioner Crystal Rhodes says the pipeline route approved by the PSC is not the route that was vetted by state and federal agencies and subject to public hearings and comment. And so, she says, it violates due process.
There are at least 40 landowners along the approved route who may not even know that their land is in this pipeline's path. Since they may not know that they are in the path of the pipeline, they may not have participated in this proceeding.
The commissioner also says TransCanada's required consultation with Native people was done with an out-of-state tribe. She cites a report from the Department of State.
The applicant reported, according to the DOS, that they had worked with the Southern Ponca tribe who reside in Oklahoma.
Rhodes says the route runs over the Ogallala Aquifer and through several miles of fragile soils subject to landslides that will not be easily restored after construction. After the commission meeting, pipeline opponents rallied to declare their intention to continue fighting the pipeline. TransCanada issued a written statement saying the company will evaluate its costs versus benefits before deciding whether to build the line. I'm Victoria Wicks.
The Treaty Alliance, an organization which represents 150 U.S. and Canadian tribes, is speaking out against the approval of the Keystone XL pipeline. As Jim Kent reports, Treaty Alliance members say they're disappointed the pipeline would be approved days after an oil spill in South Dakota.
In approving the Keystone XL pipeline, the Nebraska Public Service Commission noted that it, quote, could not factor in spill considerations, end quote. Larry Wright Jr. is chairman of the Ponca tribe in Nebraska. He says it's sad, but the decision didn't surprise him.
And it really shows you what mentality is going on here, that even in light of that leak that is half a state away from Nebraska, on a scale that we don't even know yet, how can we possibly say yes to that? And yet they did. Time and again, example after example is given, and people choose to ignore those things.
Ponca tribal members are concerned over the impact the pipeline may have on traditional lands it will cross, as well as the Oglala Aquifer. Crow Creek Tribal Chairman Brandon Sazu was among those protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation last year. Sazu says, like the Dakota Access Pipeline and the South Dakota Keystone Pipeline leak, Keystone XL is an issue that crosses all racial boundaries.
This is a human being issue about what's good for our environment, what's good for our children.
The Crow Creek Tribal Chairman anticipates an even greater protest against Keystone XL than there was against the Dakota Access Pipeline. I'm Jim Kent.
Authorities are investigating a deadly weekend shooting at a Northern California tribe. Peggy Berryhill has more.
Early Sunday morning, a shooting occurred at a residence on the Point Arena Manchester Rancheria. An unknown assailant stood outside the residence and peppered it with bullets. Callers indicated that two females, a 32-year-old adult and a 15-year-old juvenile, had been struck by gunfire. The 32-year-old was pronounced dead at the scene, and the 15-year-old was taken to the hospital in Santa Rosa. She was later released. A vehicle was heard leaving the area in a rapid manner. The unknown assailant is still at large. The names of the victims have not been released yet. This is Peggy Berryhill reporting.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians promoting heart health. Information on helping prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes at aaip.org/million-hearts. Support provided by Freedom Lodge. Is historical trauma a concern in your community? You can join our Historical Trauma Master Class beginning February 2018. Registration deadline is December 1 at freedomlodge.org.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins, joined in the studio today by Natalie Watson. She's here from Aware, Inc., where she runs two really special and important programs, Girls on the Run and Boys Run E-Tuwu-Klatsin. How is my Tlingit pronunciation there? Which I understand translates to strengthen your spirit.
That's correct.
Right? So tell me about these programs. They sound wonderful.
Yes. Well, a lot of people know about Girls on the Run, right? It started... We started it in Alaska in 2008, and it's one of our violence prevention strategies. We find it really works. It's an empowering and fun after-school program. It prepares girls for a lifetime of healthy living and self-respect. It teaches them to be joyful, healthy, and confident. So it's a wonderful program, and it's expanded throughout the state.
Mm-hmm.
Boys Run E-Tuwu-Klatsin was started between Aware and Safe. Sitka's Against Family Violence several years ago, and it's slowly been growing, and it's starting to expand throughout the Southeast now. And it's a little different, but it kind of has the same structure. It's a 10-week program with volunteer coaches. The boys do running games, discussion, and gradually they strengthen their spirit and their bodies throughout the program. And at the end, they all run a 5K together, so girls and boys. They all run a 5K.
Right, and you've got a 5K coming up, right, a week from Saturday?
That's
Tell us
correct.
About that.
Yeah, so it's going to be super fun. So we have 75 kids, their families, their friends, all our coaches, other volunteers, and everybody's invited to run the 5K. And there's going to be kind of a celebration before, and our theme is Mario Kart. So it's going to be a little like a video game where there's going to be fun things to touch. There's going to be like stars to touch for superpower. And there'll be like a Bowser character running around chasing the kids.
Oh, how fun. Yeah. Where will this be?
This will be at the field house.
Okay, so it's an indoor 5K?
That's right. It's what we do in the winter.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good to me because it's cold out there.
Yeah.
Okay, so you said you were expecting about how many young people participating?
We have 75 kids in these programs.
That's great.
Yeah, it really is.
And do they, I guess they get kind of excited as we head to a big run like this?
They should get super excited. It's a big deal, you know, especially for a third or fourth grader to run a 5K, 3.1 miles.
Yeah, right.
Pretty amazing.
Maybe could you talk a little bit about what you observe with this particular class of young people who've come through the 10-week program? What did you notice when they walked in the door, and where are we now with them?
Well, the coaches would be able to say better than mm-hmm. me. I've been able to check in on them, but I always see kids really kind of bonding together, mm-hmm. you know, being a little less clicky, kind of taking care of each other
more. Because they probably come from different schools and different neighborhoods.
Yeah, well, it's at each school, so
okay.
it's usually the kids know each other a little bit, but, you know, between third, fourth, and fifth grade, sometimes they don't all know each other. And so they make friends, and they get stronger, and they get inspired to go after their dreams. That's a big part of the program.
And who are some of these coaches you have?
Oh, well, we have some of the most amazing men and women in Juneau. So these people who, you know, give 10 weeks of their time after school twice a week for hour half each time. And other people from just across the community in all sorts of different sectors. They just come forth and offer their time and energy to these
what
girls.
What do you think motivates them? Why do it? What do you think they get out of it?
Well, there's lots of different reasons, but I feel like we all know that the world could use some more empowered women mm-hmm. and some more respectful men, and that's kind of what we're all doing. We really want to see our girls, you know that they can achieve what they want to achieve, you know, to believe in themselves from a young age, to not absorb all the negative messages.
Mm-hmm.
And boys, too, we want them to believe in the strength of their spirit and, you know, not be pressured by their peers to do things that are unhealthy or disrespectful.
Hmm. Natalie, I'm going to ask you to do something really scary, which is to go back to junior high and to, or even earlier, third, uh-huh. fourth grade.
Yeah.
Think of yourself. Were you a runner? Were you physically active? Were you encouraged as a girl to be athletic? What
yeah.
kind of kept you on the straight and narrow?
Yeah, well, a big part of it was my dad. He was really into sports, and he was my soccer coach, so I think that really helped me. But something changed in middle school. I suddenly dropped out of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so. I kind of did too. Mm-hmm. I got more into doing like art and choir and music, which
yeah.
was really good. But after participating in Pee Wee sports as a child, I really kind of didn't do it anymore because I felt like I was chubby. I wasn't comfortable in my own skin,
yeah.
and I was basically not. Yeah, just didn't have the same encouragement.
It must happen to a lot of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, we have a Heart and Soul program for the middle school that we mm-hmm. usually do in the spring. This time it's just the elementary kids.
Great.
But yeah, hopefully that they'll all know that they can do something amazing and, you know, complete a 5K, even if they're not athletic.
Right. What a great sense of accomplishment, I bet, when they mm-hmm. cross that finish line.
For sure.
That they did it. You know, we were talking before the show, and I mentioned that I lived in Charlotte, North Carolina about 10 years ago when the founder of Girls on the Run, Molly Barker, had just taken the program national. And she was a big rock star in Charlotte, justifiably so at the time. And I remember hearing her speak, and someone asked her, what's your goal with this program? Like, where do you see it ultimately leading? And she said, you know, my goal is for this program to become unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
I want to put girls out of the run out of business by helping to build a world where every girl feels comfortable as herself in her body, where every child realizes their physical potential and doesn't need some kind of formal program to make that happen.
Okay.
So where do you feel like we are in terms of working toward that goal, maybe here in Juneau, Alaska?
Yeah, well, I think we've got a long way to go still, unfortunately. Yeah, we're going to be necessary a while longer. Juneau is an amazing place. I think I've seen some of the strongest women I've ever seen
mm-hmm.
in this town. But the girls are still getting messages from, you know, the international community or the national media.
Right.
And they're not positive messages on the whole.
Right.
And kids just absorb these messages. Like my third grader's already telling me that she's fat.
Ugh.
Yeah. I don't know where she got that idea, but it's somewhere
yeah.
out there and she absorbed it. And
well, I think what's scary as a parent is when I hear my child echo things like that I probably have said to myself in the mirror, like, oh, my God, I can't wear these jeans anymore. And, yeah, they pick it up from ourselves sometimes.
They do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you're right. There's something about middle school, like some kind of thing that clicks where I notice with my child, I'm a 12-year-old, feels totally comfortable wearing whatever works with the weather, you know. And I love how in Juneau, as adult women, we are maybe less focused on fashion and more on practicality.
Mm-hmm.
I can go to the grocery store without wearing lipstick. I couldn't do that in Charlotte, North Carolina, I'll tell you that. People would make sure I was okay or if I needed to go into rehab or something. Totally different beauty standard here, which is very liberating.
It's true.
But you look out in front of Jane Douglas High School on a cold day and you see girls in the short shorts
oh, yeah.
and the heels, and I was just like, girlfriend, what are you doing? So, yeah.
Take care of your health.
I know. It's not healthy. So, I don't know. They need girls on the run.
Yeah, they need girls on the run, or just, yeah, they need to find their strength somehow.
Yeah. And boys definitely play a part. So tell me, how is the program oriented a little bit differently when you've got the boys groups?
Yeah, well, boys don't need as much empowerment. They already feel pretty empowered, I'd say, except that they're not empowered from within as much as we'd like. So we want them to trust themselves, so to learn to feel what feels wrong and what feels right. We also want to teach them some traditional Southeast Alaska values. So a lot of that is respect for nature, property, for each other, for yourself. So that's something we really emphasize. Then there's a lot about just emotional intelligence, so about recognizing their emotions and being able to communicate their emotions without kind of getting angry. And I want to emphasize, too, that both these programs are a lot of fun. They're not just learning.
Right.
We put these ideas into games, so the kids are having fun while they're doing this.
Oh, that's great. Well, it sounds like fun. So for those listening, maybe they have a child who might want to participate. Maybe they themselves might want to volunteer and help out. How can we learn more? How can we get involved?
Yeah, so Girls on the Run has a great website. It's gotrgreateralaska.org.
Mm-hmm.
So they can find out a lot of stuff there. They can always email me. I'm nataliew@awareak.org. And if you want to volunteer at the 5K, I'd love to hear from you. You can also reach me at 586-4902. And the schools that will be having these programs next season is still up in the air, which schools will have them, but probably it'll be the Girls on the Run will probably be at every school.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah.
Starting about when?
It'll be starting about mid-February.
Okay.
And the coach training will be early February.
Okay. So if you want to get involved, this is a good time to find out more.
Very much. Yeah, we're always looking for volunteer coaches. It's a really great volunteer opportunity. You get to make a big difference in kids' lives.
Sounds fantastic. And again, that 5K is on December 2nd
at
the Field House.
That's right. 10 a.m. is when we're going to start the celebrations.
Mm-hmm. And people can just come and cheer on the kids?
Absolutely. Or they can just run the 5K. It's kind of fun. It's going to be great.
I might try it.
Oh,
I'm
yeah?
a little out of, out of condition, but I will work toward that.
Wonderful.
Natalie Watson, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
And happy running with those girls and boys.
Thank you.
The Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, November the 21st, 2017. It was on this day in 1995 the agreement known as the Dayton Accords were signed between rival Balkan states, Bosnia, Serbia, and Croatia. They met on the outskirts of Dayton, Ohio, an agreement to end the war in Bosnia, which at that point had cost a 250,000 lives, displaced more than 2 million people, which all grew out of the breakup of the former Yugoslavia. It's the birthday of Voltaire, born in Paris in 1694, who wrote the satire Candide, wrote nearly 20,000 letters, 2,000 books and pamphlets, probably because he drank more than 40 cups of coffee every day, all while lying in bed and dictating his writing to secretaries. He earned a fortune when he learned how to game the French national lottery. He was imprisoned in the Bastille for a year after writing some scandalous poetry, mocking King Louis XIV, exiled to England as well. Built a large house in Geneva, where he set about cultivating a beautiful garden, and where he also wrote Candide. On his deathbed, Voltaire said, "I die adoring God, loving my friends, not hating my enemies, and detesting superstition." It's the birthday of the playwright Tina Howe, born in New York City, 1937. She went off to the Sorbonne to study philosophy, and there she saw a performance of Eugene Ionesco's The Bald Soprano, which so impressed her it changed her life. She said it was as if I'd been hit in the head with a thunderbolt, and so she decided to become a playwright herself. She said, "My goal in life was to bring the same sort of joy and anarchy and fizz and helium to female rituals that he was bringing to male rituals." Her first play was panned by critics. Play ended with a nude jumping into a wedding cake. Her second play, Museum, had 18 actors playing 44 characters, described as a surrealist comedy of manners, showing very proper upper-class people trying their best to follow social norms even as circumstances become more and more ridiculous. And it's the birthday of the first woman to make the bestseller list in the United States, Mary Johnston, born in Buchanan, Virginia, 1870. The book was To Have and To Hold. It was the best-selling novel in 1900. Here's a poem by Fanny Howe. But I, too, want to be a poet. But I, too, want to be a poet, to erase from my days confusion and poverty, fiction and a sharp tongue. To sing again with the tones of adolescence, demanding vengeance against my enemies with words clear and austere. To end this tumultuous quest for reasonable solutions to situations mysterious and sore. To have the height to view myself as I view others, with lenience and love. To be free of the need to make a waste of money when my passion, first and last, is for the ecstatic lash of the poetic line and no visible recompense. A poem by Fanny Howe, I Too Want to Be a Poet, from the Selected Poems of Fanny Howe, published by University of California Press Books and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac, supported by Staples, with copy and print solutions for business, including color copies and presentations, booklets, signage, and more, in stores or at staples.com. Staples, it's pro time. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins, joined in the studio now by two young people from The Canvas. This is Glo Ramirez and Alex Patello. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
So for those of us, those listeners who may not be familiar, tell us, what is The Canvas? We walk by the storefront on Seward Street. What's going on in there?
So The Canvas is a progressive artist studio that serves try to include artists with living that have disabilities, but we offer classes to the community. So, and we have a studio time for people that want to do their own art too.
Mm-hmm. And my child actually took pottery classes, and I understand, Alex, that's specialty.
My realm. Yeah, that's what I kind of do every day, is just kind of keeping the studio organized and keep all the firings going through, so that we're cycling through new pieces and new work as readily as we can. And we've been really busy this season. I think as the snow's been coming down, people are looking for warm things to do as it's getting darker. And
right, we all need some productive hobbies.
Yeah. So it's been really, really good in there recently. It's been a lot of fun.
And you've been creating items for a very particular purpose, right, coming up, public market. Tell me kind of what you all have planned for that big event.
Well, there's a lot of products that we have coming out that Glo knows a little bit more about. But part of what I'm doing is every year we try to come out with a new design for cups and bowls that the person in my position generally makes. So making some cups, making some bowls, just putting on a new design. So generally we borrow, we basically license out some artwork from one of the artists with disabilities from the canvas, and then we'll put it on a decal on these cups, and then we'll have them on display and for sale at the public market. So we're really looking forward to that. I'm finishing the last few little details on them today and tomorrow, so they'll be ready by Friday.
Wow, your hands must be tired.
Yeah.
I see some clay. You got clay all over your pants. I mean, come on.
Yeah, no, it's the look. And once you start being in the studio every day,
it's all right. You come by it honestly. Okay. And Glo was showing me that. So The Canvas has a great Instagram page, and you were showing me some of the pictures of the other items that you have, wrapping paper with the printed logos that were created by the artists. What are some other items?
So we have our store in the gallery. So we sell wrapping papers, journals, and a little bit of everything. But right now we're going to start having leggings, scarves, the water bottles. We have tote bags with their designs, and they're very colorful and so fun and great to have.
Yeah. So Santa, if you're listening, those colorful leggings, the blue and the pink ones, I'm about a medium, just a little hint there. Okay.
Yes.
So, and with the Instagram, you have a special promotion going on. Tell us about that.
We have. So we are asking locals to follow our webpage or our Instagram account, that it's Canvas Arts Juno. And if you follow us, tag two friends and share the post, then you can be one of the winners for one mug and one bowl that Alex is making. And it's a surprise for everyone because we haven't seen the design yet, so it will be revealed on Friday.
Ooh, but it's going to be beautiful, I bet.
That's the hope.
I'm going to get in on that contest. Yeah. That's wonderful. Okay, so public market, I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about that as we head toward the Thanksgiving holiday. It's all weekend. People go to Centennial Hall and the Jack. We shop. We basically get our Christmas shopping done, supporting local artists. Do you all have any idea where you will be in the layout of the market?
It's at Centennial Hall, booth D13.
Booth D13. Yes. Okay.
We're going to be there. It's so that corner booth this year.
Corner booth in the main room in the Centennial Hall.
You guys are hitting the big time.
Yeah. So we have a nice big open space to have all of our products out and have people come check out, ask good questions, and just get to sort of hang out with the community.
Right.
Yeah.
And when I buy an item from you guys, where does my money go?
It goes to the canvas to keep buying materials and keeping the canvas alive, basically, and we can keep buying things for those artists to keep working on their own art. Mm-hmm. Like, we like to highlight them and to show everyone that they're basically artists and they enjoy what they do. And you can see it on the products that they're colorful and just unique and it's just like them.
They are beautiful. Yeah. Well, I have actually, in my dining room, I have two paintings by Avery Skaggs, who is one of your artists. And he's a complete rock star.
Yeah.
Incredible painter. And everyone who comes to dinner at my house, they say, oh, my gosh, where did you get those paintings? They're from some gallery in Chicago or somewhere. And I say, no, right here in Juneau, Avery Skaggs. So, these are some serious artists.
And we're going to be having some original art too, framed and everything. So if someone is just looking for wonderful art to decorate, it's going to be there in our booth too. Yeah.
I think art is always nice to put under the tree
at
holiday time. Great. And then for those who maybe go to the booth, they see items thinking, as Alex said, it's going to be a long, dark winter. I got to get busy. How can people find out more about classes and other offerings at the canvas?
Yeah, they can always come to the canvas. Call the canvas, it's 907-586-1750, or they can go to our website, canvasarts.org, but we will have the classes that we are going to be having four holiday classes during December time. So anyone that wants like to decorate their tree, we are going to have ornament classes.
Oh, wonderful.
Making, printmaking cards with Jim Human. We're going to have the other ones, gingerbread houses decorating, because every holiday needs the gingerbread house, and painting scarves, silk scarves, so you can rock them or just give them away during Christmas.
Right. I think you would start painting a scarf with the idea of making a present for someone, and then,
I kind of like it myself. Yeah, I might hold on to this.
Great.
Yeah.
And I imagine these classes are probably going to be popular, so people do want to go to canvasarts.org. Is there a sign-up ahead of time kind of deal?
Yeah, you can buy the classes online, or you can come into the canvas. You can even do it on the phone if you want to. But, yeah, classes have been filling up. Like, I have, like, 3-4 people on some of the classes already. So that's always wonderful to know that people are interested in doing those classes.
Okay.
And they're just short classes because it's winter time. So basically it's 1 or 2 days each class. So if you just want to, like, make a big present that day, so you can do it.
Right, get a taste of a new craft. Yeah. Pottery, maybe intimidating for some people, Alex? How can we kind of get over our fear and get our hands on the clay?
Well, shouldn't be intimidated. We encourage everyone to come in there. I don't have any classes going on in December just because I think everyone's kind of going in and out of town. But starting the new year, I think it's in the first or second week of January, I'll be starting up a lot of my beginning wheel throwing classes for kids after school. Generally, those are starting at like 3:30. I don't know what day we chose for January, but my guess is it's probably a Tuesday. And then I also run two beginning wheel throwing classes for adults. One's generally on Sundays from noon to 3. Mm-hmm. The other would be an evening from 6 to 9, and that's either a Monday or Tuesday. So we'll be posting that schedule here pretty soon. But, yeah, you know, I encourage everyone to come in if you do know a little bit about pottery but don't know an available studio. Our studio is the open studio. There's plenty of time to just come in, work on whatever interests you. We've got a great community of people there right now, so it's a fun place to be.
Yeah, and whenever I walk in there, I just walk out smiling. It is a happy place. So thank you so much, Glo Ramirez and Alex Vitello, for telling us all about the canvas. We'll look for you at Public Market, and I hope you sell lots of stuff.
Thank you so much.
All right, happy holidays.
This is Bird Note. Massive volcanic eruptions brought forth the Hawaiian Islands from deep beneath the sea. How did these remote islands of lava rock grow lushly green with plant life? Birds played a vital role. Birds like the Pacific golden plover we're hearing now. Three-quarters of Hawaii's native flowering plants probably came from seeds that hitched rides with birds. Plant seeds travel with birds in several ways. Sticky or barbed seeds adhere to the feathers, much like the seeds stuck in your socks after a walk in a weedy field. Other seeds travel in mud caked on a bird's feet, and still others cross the ocean in the stomachs of birds. The bird-borne seeds that sprouted in Hawaii evolved into more than 1,000 new species. The most likely seed carriers were strong flyers like plovers or tropic birds, which travel thousands of miles across the Pacific. Or perhaps the seeds hitched a ride on the ancestors of this Akeapola owl we're hearing, caught in a storm and blown to the Hawaiian Islands. Learn more at birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein. Support for BirdNote comes from Songbird Coffee, offering bird-friendly, organic, shade-grown coffee for holiday giving. More at birdnote.org/songbird.
Support for this station comes from Chef Steps, with homemade baked goods including holiday shortbreads, salted licorice, granola, and more. Available at Public Market, the Juno Artists Gallery, and online at chefsteps.com.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins, joined now in the studio by Christy Nami Erickson and Ben Huff. They're here to talk about Ice Fog Press and a book release party, I understand, is coming up with the Gallery Walk. Christy and Ben, welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Julie.
All right, so tell me, Ice Fog Press, what is it?
It's a small independent publishing company that I started a year ago. Artist books and editions and work by, in this case, for First Friday next week, an entirely local contingent. Christy and myself in a collaboration, and then Chris Taylor, a local painter, has a book of his own, and both of them being released a week from Friday.
Okay, so you've like made these books and made them happen right here in Juneau. How amazing is that?
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's
basically magic.
That is great. And we can check them out. They're going to be hot off the presses next Friday evening at the Ice Fog Press Studio.
Yeah.
You said it's 114 South Franklin.
114 South Franklin's in the Triangle Building.
In the Triangle
Right
building.
Above Annie Kale's and Hearthside, but the entrance is on the Franklin Street side across from Rockwell.
Okay, so December 1st, Friday,
yep.
People are walking around town, they can pop in, check out the book.
Absolutely. We'll have both books
on hand.
The two
books. Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me, so Ben, I understand you're a photographer, and I know Christy Nami, you're a poet and woman about town and artist as well, graphic artist. So can you kind of describe the book?
Yeah. Christy, you want to take?
Sure. Let's see. Several months ago, Ben sat me down with his collection of photographs of satellite dishes.
That sounds funny,
doesn't
yeah, it?
Yeah. and was talking about how, like, this is, you know, a series that he had that he'd been wanting to make into a book and was picturing having my words with it. And what interested me in the project was, unlike times where photographers have asked me to, like,
write poems to each of their photographs, like as though I was maybe describing what's happening in it. Ben suggested that it be more a study of type, more a study of theme, in terms of what kind of values or feelings or thoughts or emotions that are going on in this collection could then be represented in words that may not immediately relate to the pictures, but kind of run alongside them throughout the book. So for me, it was a really cool collaboration in sitting down with Ben to find out more about why take all of these pictures of other people's satellite dishes.
So these are the little ones that people have stuck on their houses, right?
You photographed in most cases, yeah.
Okay. And so it's a device that, you know, receives signals, right, so that we can watch movies and boxing and whatever. So what does that say to you as a poet? Where did this idea lead for you?
Right. Well, in listening to Ben talk about the photographs, talk about what satellite dishes meant to him, talk about his process of, as a photographer, for me the main themes that started to emerge were like loneliness and isolation, and yet also this like longing for connection. And so what I tried to explore in terms of my poem is the concept of distance and connection, right? This opportunity to kind of connect with people across space, across a long distance, and yet also this kind of intimacy and vulnerability that sometimes creates distance as well, right? So the idea that, like, maybe you could be holding someone who's 2,000 miles away in some ways, and then there's other times where you're sitting right next to someone and they feel like they're four time zones away, right? So wanting to kind of juxtapose that kind of human feeling that I get from looking at what I see as portraits of satellite dishes. So the title of the book is called Latent Landscapes, which I really love because I think they really do create this landscape, this horizon of personalities and connections between them. And each photograph actually kind of, I think, stands alone as a portrait when maybe by definition they're all just still lifes.
But the viewer has to participate in this because we have to imagine what all might be going into the satellite dish and what all might be received. You know, we don't see it. It seems like there's an input, like you said, it's a latent landscape. Yeah. So it's interesting. We sort of maybe make assumptions about what might be passing through this device and why. And it's, you know, we have these satellite dishes so that we can connect with things across the world, like you say, but we have these satellite dishes so that we can stay home and not go anywhere.
Exactly.
So that paradox of modern life.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's deep.
Wanting to think a lot. this is the kind of stuff we chewed on for hours.
I love it.
And we loved it, yeah. And I think there's some photos that I just love how intimate they feel just looking at a satellite dish, right? Just looking at kind of peering in slightly into a window, into a lifestyle, right? And thinking about what are they watching? What are they doing? And then you as the photographer are standing, you know, outside of that room, outside of their house, on the other side of a fence, you know?
Right.
And so what is kind of this relationship between distance and closeness was fascinating for me to explore as a writer.
Right. And also kind of what we communicate to our neighbors sort of unknowingly, like, I have friends in New York City who talk about, like, I can't put a tablecloth out on the clothesline because then people want to know who I had for dinner the night before or something. It's like things that sort of, or you put out an old chair on the street to give away. That's kind of a vulnerable.
Yeah, it's intimate.
It's a little bit like, I don't want my neighbors to know me that well that I had that ugly chair in my house. But I've got this satellite dish. Excellent. So this is maybe a book that had you marketed it to, you know, gotten an agent and went to some, you know, Duttenhofer or whatever in New York that probably wouldn't have bought it, but you got it published here in Juneau. How did that happen?
You know, books they're such an indispensable part of my process as a photographer, as an artist, as my ongoing education, appreciation. I mean, they're just so dear to me. And I've been wanting to have a small press for, I mean, almost as long as I've been a photographer, right? To make these small things that can encapsulate bodies of work and to give them a different relationship with the viewer, or sort of contextualize them in a different way. You know, this isn't sort of a thick hardcover sort of book that maybe you'd expect to, you know, get down at the bookstore. Maybe they're sort of more, I sort of think of them as being more humble and modest and sort of accessible. When you talk about like going to a larger publisher, it was never like that was never the intent, right? Mm-hmm. It's to make something that sort of has. I'm always looking for something that has sort of a softness and an intimacy and accessibility, and I think that's what we've created with the book that Christy and I have made, mm-hmm. And then the book that I'm making with Chris Taylor, which I'm not a part of at all, other than designing and sort of help facilitating things. It also has a sort of a quietness and sort of a softness and definitely an introspection, mm-hmm. I think, to it, and something that, you're right, I mean, is not something that if we had 3,000 copies, would we ever sell 3,000 copies, right? And that's not to say that it's less work. It's not the aim. It's not the thing that we're trying to. It's not the thing that we're trying to make, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I don't see it necessarily as like, just to echo the concept that it's not about a project based on distribution, mm-hmm. or even based on saying this is who we are as artists completely. Mm-hmm. I see it as like a moment in time, a project in time, a collaboration in time, creating this kind of pocket exhibition, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. Like an exhibit. We'll have some pieces, some snapshots of the book on display at the release party, but it's really a moment for folks to kind of join us on that exploration of, mm-hmm. of distance and connection, chewing on some of the concepts that we were talking about, and then being able to kind of take it home with them, mm-hmm. Is a way that is exciting for me, because I think that's not an experience that you get to have on gallery walk very often, or even with books very often.
Right. It's more permanent than a gallery display, and it more permanent than a Tumblr album, or right. you know,
and more temporary than a book.
It's about a bit of a
New York Times bestseller,
right? Yeah. I'm not going to see it at the airport, but mm-hmm. I can pick it up here in downtown Juneau.
Yeah.
Congratulations mm-hmm. to you both. What a great project! I can't wait to see it. So let's get those details again. This is Icefog Press Studio. Will be at 114 South Franklin in the Triangle Building for First Friday, December 1st. Is that the first or the second?
It's the first.
December 1st, yep. Gallery Walk.
Yep.
And that's usually from, like, what, 4 to 6?
We'll be about, come to 4, we'll be there, but technically it's 5 to 8.
Okay.
But we'll be there at 4. You may just help us set some things up. we'll be there. And Christy and I will be on hand. Chris Taylor will be on hand.
Great.
The other artist with his book, Silos. And that's a book that we're hand-making entirely in-house there in the studio. And it's a much smaller run, and it's sort of beautiful, and we're still sort of working out the kinks, and it feels so sort of indie and kind of crazy and a little bit like we're out of our head, which is beautiful. But yeah, we'll have both books on hand. They'll both be for sale that night. Actually, they're available for pre-order right now at icefogpress.com. If anybody wants to see just a couple pictures, just sort of a teaser, at the website, they can learn a little bit more about the book if they're sitting at home right now and want a little more information. It's out there, and then come see us next Friday.
Right, so turn off your satellite cable and come downtown and
totally.
Have a human experience.
Please.
Thank you, Christy Nami Erickson and Ben Huff. Thanks again for coming in today, and good luck with the book.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us, Julie.
Please, mister, don't touch me, tomato. Please don't you touch me, tomato. Touch me, yummy pumpkin potato. For goodness sake, don't touch me, tomato. Touch me this, you touch me that. Touch me everything I've got. Touch me plum and me apple too. Here's one thing you just can't do. All you do is feel 'em, feel 'em. Ain't you tired of the feel 'em, feel 'em? All you do is feel 'em, man. Ain't you tired of the squeeze 'em, squeeze 'em? Please, mister, don't touch me, tomato. Please don't you touch me, tomato. Touch me, yummy pumpkin potato. For goodness sake, don't touch me, tomato. Please is to take advice from me. The more you look, the less you see. If you just must have your way, double the price you've got to pay. All you do is feel 'em, feel 'em. Ain't you tired of the feel 'em, feel 'em? All you do is squeeze 'em, squeeze 'em. Man, ain't you tired of the squeeze 'em, squeeze 'em? Please, miss, but don't touch me, tomato. Please don't you touch me, tomato. Touch me, yummy pumpkin potato. For goodness sake, don't touch me, tomato. You're hard like a coconut. Nuts on nuts, but nothing but. Before the temper is sugar and hot, man, make up your mind just what is what. All you do is feel 'em, feel 'em. Ain't you tired of the feel 'em, feel 'em? All you do is squeeze 'em, squeeze 'em. Man, ain't you tired of the squeeze 'em, squeeze 'em? Please, mister, don't touch me, tomato. Please don't you touch me, tomato. Touch me, yummy pumpkin potato. For goodness sake, don't touch me, tomato.
Playa. Peace, love, and joy from Sea Alaska Heritage. When you shop at Sea Alaska Heritage Store, you're supporting Southeast Alaska Native art, languages, and cultural programming all year long, making it the best place to buy Alaska Native art and gifts. Stop by the Walter Soboloff Building Tuesday through Friday 10 to 6 and Saturday 10 to 5. This message brought to you by Sea Alaska Heritage.
This is Sarah Raster from the Year of Kindness Steering Committee. As part of 17YOK, all sorts of groups have adopted specific weeks during which they are doing something special to help spread kindness. This week's group is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Protected Resources Division. You can send stories and pictures of your own kindness experiences to 17YOK@junopolice.com. Together, we can make Juneau a better place to live.
You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins, joined in the studio now by Alexandra Pierce. She's a project manager with the City Bureau of Juneau Parks and Recreation Division, telling us about the master plan. There is a master plan.
There is a master plan, and there will be a new master plan. We are working on it right now.
Okay. So what can you tell us? So what are some things that are sort of some of the balls that you have in the air right now with that?
Well, it's a two-year process, and it'll be wrapping up in sometime in the first half of 2018. We did a big public process last fall. People may remember we had some phone and online surveys, a big online feedback push, a number of public meetings. And from that information that we gathered, we've been trying to refine the public input that we need. We've developed a set of recommendations, and we've been reaching out to our stakeholders and partners. I think I met with 30 different community organizations last fall, and we're continuing to work on those with those organizations on an individual basis to really help figure out the recreation network in Juneau. A big theme of this plan, this process, this department is that Parks and Rec services in the community, and I'm not just speaking about CBJ-offered services, but there are so many wonderful community organizations providing great services on a nonprofit basis. And, you know, these really form the ounce of prevention against youth crime, drug, alcohol problems by providing constructive activities. You know, same for possibly underserved adults and seniors. So
so you all have the kind of the same goals in mind.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. So I'm a regular Juneau person. I go hiking. I go hang out at Cope Park, and I consume these services in these facilities. So for me, like, I imagine you, one of the challenges of your job is people maybe don't realize all the different actors that have to be coordinated to make those parks and those trails and all those things happen and work and keep them. And like, they maybe you get calls and you have to say, well, that's really not our department, or that's really not, You know, yeah. how do you fix that perception problem or communication problem?
And, you know, we just wrapped up an online survey that we did, which was in no way statistically valid. We just wanted some more information on youth and senior activities. We'd had some broad, people would like to see more early childhood programs, for example. But,
right.
You know, what exactly do people want to see?
Mm-hmm.
So we got all the results back, and a lot of those things may not necessarily be appropriate for Parks and Rec to offer, but we wanted to ask the question of what do we need in Juneau as opposed to
right.
what does the city need to provide? And we did get some comments that said, well, the city shouldn't be providing these services, or some of them. And, you know, we agree, but it gives us the opportunity to maybe look at one of our partners and say, well, here's what we heard, or look at our own programs and say, well, maybe we need to tweak this a little bit based on the input that we received from the community. You also spoke about parks. We're just wrapping up a parks inventory where we looked at the landscape and do we have the right parks in the right places with the right equipment. Came up with some land use kind of designations, classifications, and ideas, and then some priorities for our parks maintenance department as well as capital improvement project priorities. So these are the parks with the highest use based on the public outreach that we've done and also that are kind of per high use in worst
right.
repair. And so what are our highest priorities for that when we go to the assembly at budget time?
Right. Well, and I imagine what attention that you experience is, you know, Parks and Rec, maybe you thought this would be a fun thing to do when you grew up. I was like, oh, my gosh, it's all meetings and administration. And how do you kind of recharge yourself? How do you keep the focus on the good stuff? And this is why I do this.
Well, I myself am an avid trail user. And so I think it helps to kind of play where you live
yeah.
and work and actually see the benefit of what we're doing. And it's easy to get bogged down in the process. It's fortunate we have a steering committee for this project. It's a special committee of the Parks and Rec Advisory Committee. And we've been trying to keep those meetings focused at the high level. So this is, we're reviewing this section of the plan, but this is really broadly what we're trying to do and what we're trying to achieve. And these are the mission and vision and guiding principles that we're working towards. And so keeping the eyes on the big stuff and how that looks in the community over the next 10 to 20 years is really critical because it is very easy to get bogged down
right.
into the details of planning.
Well, speaking of details, what about the Flume Trail? Because, you know, I want to walk my dog and it's still closed, right? So you're
and it's
on
actually
that.
Not our trails.
Okay, see, exactly.
Yeah.
Case in point.
Yeah.
You get those kind of calls or everything seems urgent, but, yeah, keeping an eye on the big picture. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what's a way that people who maybe who haven't been a part of these surveys in the past, haven't really keyed into that public feedback process, how can we get involved? Where do we go? Where and how do you want to hear from us?
So juneau.org/parkrec is our website, and on the main landing page is a link. It's a map-looking thing to PlaySpeak, which is a service that you do have to register for, but it allows us to continually communicate with the people who have connected to the topic online, so we can tell people when we have a new kind of flash poll or we are having a public meeting or we've released a new document or whatever the update may be, people who are connected to the topic can continue to participate. We have discussion forums and opportunities for people to give their feedback.
Right. So you can get there through the CBJ website, and I was also looking at it, or you can go to PlaySpeak, PlaySpeak.com/CBJ Park Rec.
Absolutely.
Okay, and get involved that way.
Excellent. And, you know, people, if they have specific comments or feedback about something, are always welcome to email me at alexandra.pierce@juneau.org. And we really value all the community input that we can get. It's not too late. And we'll be going out to the public in the next few months with a draft master plan. And at that point, the public will have an opportunity to review and comment on that project.
Have you done this kind of work in other places?
I have, yeah.
I'm curious how Juno, I mean, it would seem to me like people here are really invested in Parks and Rec. Like, we care deeply about this subject. Is that my perception, or is that really kind of what you've noticed?
It's true. You know, I've worked in the land use and trails planning world previously, and people are extremely passionate about their recreation. And it's what we do that matters to us, you know? And so I've certainly seen it in other places where there's usually one or two hot-button issues with groups that are really passionate. But Juneau is definitely a unique community. It's a very community-involved place, which is great. It's really great the amount of feedback that we've received and the number of people who donate time and energy to activities to keep these wonderful services and programs that we have outside of Parks and Rec going, not to mention people who volunteer with Parks and Rec. So it's really neat to see, and I guess from my perspective, I'm from Juneau, but I worked elsewhere for a long time until coming back to take this job. So it's very encouraging to see and recognize the people who really devote their time to recreation and youth in this community.
Right. Well, speaking of youth, I noticed there's some great youth sports programs coming up this winter. I actually have my kids' youth basketball registration right here. I was going to hand it to you if you could take it into the office for me.
No problem whatsoever.
That's great. Yeah, he's really excited to get into basketball. There's lots. Yeah, and a lot of it, coaches are volunteers, like you say. Mm-hmm. People really put up for the kids in this town, and it's just gratifying to see.
It's really gratifying to see, and it's the thing that keeps kids, you know, on the right track.
Right. And the rest of us who eat too much Thanksgiving dinner keeps us active.
Absolutely.
We can fit into our ski pants.
It's true. We have two great pools and a nice arena.
Yes.
People can get out there after Thanksgiving.
Oh, there's a fun turkey bowl at the ice arena.
Yeah.
Do you know the details on that? I just happened to see it on the website.
I don't have the details with me, which is unfortunate, but definitely go check out the website and all the information.
Yeah, or just
there.
Google Turkeys on Ice Juneau, and you'll probably get to it. It sounds like a blast out at the ice arena. All right. Well, Alexandra, thank you so much for coming in today, and good luck with this master plan.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great. Take care.
Join Mark Everett and Sarah Everett this Thanksgiving on KRNN's Cross Currents for a special holiday listening event. We will be showcasing the best of the crooner generation, Alice's Restaurant, and at the same time be giving you all live tips and tricks to all your busy Thanksgiving meal preparation. Tune in from 8 to 10 a.m. on Thursday, November 23rd, to hear great programming just for you on Thanksgiving Day. Be careful not to burn the bird!
You've been listening to A Juneau Afternoon here on KTOO. I'm Julie Copins, and I'll be back with you tomorrow. We'll talk with Peter Metcalf about this year's public market. Cynthia Nickerson will be here with news about diabetes. We'll get an update on Eagle Crest, skiers, listen up, and Megan Chambers will be here with Arts Up. All that, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more, Wednesday on A Juneau Afternoon, live at 3 on KTOO News, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and available on demand online at ktoo.org. I'm Julie Copins. Our producer is Jeff Brown. Have a wonderful evening. One more check on the weather. We are going to go down to about 25 tonight. Light snow tomorrow. Have a good evening.